This episode of Talk Central is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time.
I'm Reinhard van der Berg.
And I'm Duncan MacLeod.
This is Talk Central, episode 225 for the week starting 8 July 2018.
Talk Central is brought to you by Tech Central, SA's premier tech news website and podcast network.
On Talk Central this week, we talk all things home automation with our special guest, Glenn Varan.
In the news this week, Teraco to pump another 1 billion rand into data center expansion and Telkom's new low-cost voice bundles.
It's Sunday. We're live on live.techcentral.co.za and it's time to talk everything technology.
Well, welcome to the show. How's it, Reinhard? And welcome, Glenn.
How's it?
I'm glad to be on the show.
Welcome to the show. Glenn, for those who don't know, is a veteran of podcasting in South Africa. Glenn, you must have had one of the first podcasts ever to launch in this country.
Yeah, I mean, we started the ZA Show on the 17th of July 2005. And actually, at the time when I checked, Googled around, I think we were about the third or so, because I think there was about one or two podcasts that emanated from outside South Africa, focusing on in Afrikaans side of things.
Right.
But yeah, it's basically one of the first, and it's been really, really quite a road, those 4.5 years when we did the ZA Show.
Yeah. Are you still involved in podcasting at all? Is that in the past?
No, I'm not, sadly. Look, we decided to end the show late 2009. And because at the end of the day, it was, all good things must come to an end, and we decided it was time to end the show. You know, life gets in the way and stuff like that. But I'm still a very avid listener of podcasts. I think that makes up most of my content that I listen to on the commute. So I'm still very, very, I keep an eye on the scene, and it's really nice to see that it's grown quite a lot in South Africa since those days.
Yeah, for sure. So, Glenn, you're based down in Cape Town. Is it? You're living in Constantia, is that right?
No. I'm not that lucky. No, I live in the Greater Tableview area in Parkland, so on the sort of west coast, I guess one can call it that.
Okay.
So as I'm sitting outside in my upstairs office, I can see Table Mountain. It's a beautiful day today, and I'm sure there are many people out there taking advantage of the good weather.
Oh, it sounds lovely. We're shivering up here in Johannesburg. It's overcast and it's about 12 degrees. enjoy the good weather before that next cold front comes through. So, Glenn, tell us a bit more about yourself. What's your background and what do you do for a living?
I work for a company I'm in the fintech business. I've been in the business now for the last 18 or so years. I'm a software engineer doing Java development, but focusing on payment. So that is my expertise is payment. So getting that transaction all the way from that point of sale all the way through a payment service provider to the acquiring banks, through a clearinghouse and straight to the issuer. So, that is where my strengths are. So that industry I know fairly well and so forth. Yeah, that's, okay. I must say, it's a really nice industry to be in.
Okay, great stuff. So we've got you on the show today. You've been a long-time listener to Talk Central and to the Tech Central podcast, so thanks for being a keen listener to the show. And it's great to have one of our listeners on as a guest, and we're going to be talking to you today about home entertainment. You've done some interesting things. I think we mentioned in a show a week or two back that you had bought the Nvidia Shield, and I want to hear all about that on the show today. And you're also involved in some home automation projects, which I'm sure will be of great interest to our listeners. So we're going to hear more about what it is exactly you've done in your home, and maybe some of our listeners will be able to take some learnings from that in some of their own projects. So really looking forward to chatting today. But before we get into that conversation, Reinhard, should we do this week's quiz?
Yes, let's get into it. Which U.S. wireless smart speaker company this week announced plans for an initial public offering?
And a New Zealand court this week said the founder of MegaUpload.com could be extradited to the U.S. Who is he?
Third question. Which African country has started taxing internet users to access Facebook, Twitter, and other social media platforms?
And Vodacom this weekend showed off the capabilities of 5G technology at which sporting event?
And the final question, telecommunications infrastructure player FiberCo has announced plans to build fiber into towns along its national fiber routes. Which town is it targeting first?
And as always, we'll get to the answers to the quiz at the end of the show. Just a reminder, we do record live on Sunday afternoons at around 1 p.m. If you'd like to be included on the show, please do send us a WhatsApp voice note. We'd love to hear from you. Our number, or the number to use for that, is 071-999-1111. 071-999-1111. Keep those voice notes coming. We'll play them back on the show. You can send them any time during the week, and we'll include them live when we record on Sunday afternoons. Just a bit of admin. We were giving away ring doorbells over the last two episodes, and we have the winners in that competition. Our first winner was a fellow podcaster by the name of Jonathan Witt from Johannesburg, who won that prize. And then I'm just firing up the phone here, the WhatsApp phone in front of me here, to find out who the name of the second one, because I haven't written it down. Our second winner was from Cape Town, and his name was... why is his name not showing up here? Glenn Verin. No, I'm just joking.
you got my hopes up so high there. So I really would like one of those.
Yeah, what a fantastic product. I mean, we're talking specifically with the home automation, Glenn, and I would like to get your inputs on this later. But what a cool little gadget, I think.
But our second winner this week is Raymond Myberg from Bergfleet in Cape Town. So congratulations to Raymond and Jonathan on winning that prize. If you haven't received it yet, it should be with you very soon. So, Glenn, you are, I guess it's fair to call you a hardcore geek. You're doing some really, really interesting stuff. Firstly, in terms of home entertainment systems, you're the first person I've ever come across who's bought an NVIDIA Shield, and I want to hear all about that and what you're doing with it. Mm-hmm. But you're also, I believe, doing some interesting stuff around home automation. But let's talk about the entertainment side of things first. You've done a lot of research. In fact, you sent me a rather detailed email about your thinking around buying the NVIDIA Shield, and you said there are only four streaming boxes nowadays that are worth considering: the NVIDIA Shield, the Apple TV, the Amazon Fire TV Cube, and the Roku device. So you've got the Shield. How long have you had it now?
I think I've had it now for a week now, and I must say it's... I love it. It's a really, really great device. And I just to give a bit of a background where I came from. Now, I decided last year, actually around about this time, that it was time to get a device that I can use to play YouTube and Netflix and whatever the case is. And looking at the budget, you look at the devices like the NVIDIA Shield and all that. Oh, it's a bit expensive, you know. And also the Shield is not officially available in South Africa. So then I decided, okay, let's just give one of these Android boxes a shot. You know, just let's try it out. So I managed to get one of those. Managed to find some custom firmware that I put onto it that gives me the Google TV or the Android TV experience.
Right.
Soon after, I just found that this box was just not cutting it. The Ethernet connector would virtually die after 24 hours, and you've got to reboot the box every day. The Wi-Fi, so then you would fall back to Wi-Fi, then you're back to the mercies of Wi-Fi, you know, the distance from the access point and stuff like that. And really, my dear wife was really frustrated, you know, with this box, because, you know, things were just buffer and it was just not a great experience. And I decided, that's it. And I think this is when I sent you the audio comment. That's it. I'm going to pull the plug on this one, and I'm going to go. So essentially, the NVIDIA Shield is obviously manufactured by NVIDIA, as we know, the guys behind all those really great graphics cards.
And expensive graphics cards.
Yeah, very expensive graphics cards as well. The thing is, a lot of these Android boxes have generally one of two processors, either the ROC chip or the MO logic chips. And here's the Shield coming in with a completely different chip, the Tegra X1, which is NVIDIA's own mobile processor, whatever one can call it that. So in any case, so I was really impressed by the performance of, watched all the YouTube videos and, you know, read all the reviews and so forth. And I was really, really impressed. Because the benchmarking that a lot of these guys have done is this box just outperformed. And we're talking about a box that was released in 2015. I mean, that's 4 years ago. And when they re-released it in 2017, they just made the enclosure smaller. So the hardware itself didn't change whatsoever. So, you know, then obviously you got the Apple TV. And you know, if you look at the Android boxes, they've got an advantage where you can download apps from the Play Store, but also, you know, Android being Android, you can download stuff that's not in the Play Store, which is always a good thing. So it's about that flexibility that I wanted, and so forth. So I thought, I could have gone with the Amazon, the Fire TV Cube, because, I mean, I've got about four Echoes in the house, and it would have been quite appropriate to have it, because I can just, you know, bark out some commands to tell the lady whose name we shall not mention on the show, because otherwise my Echo will go off, to go and turn the TV on, which is always very convenient. So I decided that's it. And of course, the Apple TV is, I've got a third generation one, and I really liked it, you know, I decided it was now time to move away from the Apple ecosystem a bit, and I think I'm very glad I did that. But in any case, the Shield is here. It's been doing duty now for a week now, and obviously the because the thing is, Google Android has got the Android TV experience, and basically the Shield is one of literally a handful of boxes that have been certified by Google. So you've got the Mi box from Xiaomi, you've got a line of Sony TVs, there's a third box, I can't remember its name, and then of course they also certify boxes like the Telkom Lit. The Telkom Lit box is also running Android TV, which is also certified by Google. But the nice thing is that the vendors of the different applications certify them as well to work on that device. So the box is capable of 4K HDR, so it's got an HDMI 2.0 port, HDCP 2.2. It can support Dolby Atmos if you've got it. So everything is there, the apps, YouTube, Amazon Prime, you name it, the apps, the vendors actually have certified that the apps will work on that device. So for me, that was a major, major plus. Yes, I don't have that nice, fancy 4K TV, but it's always nice to know that when the day comes that I do upgrade, that the box will be able to handle it, which I think is for me quite important. And then, of course, it's just got the Oreo update, which is nice. And the user interface is really, really snappy.
Is it NVIDIA's interface, or is it more of an Android TV type interface?
No, it's an Android TV interface. Mm-hmm. So if you go and look at the Mi box from Xiaomi, and you go and I've seen the YouTube videos, the Android interface is exactly the same. But the nice thing about the Shield is that you now have the gaming element to it. So you've got access to the GeForce Online game streaming service. And I must say, I was actually this morning playing Tomb Raider this morning through that, and I was really, really impressed. It worked very well. It was actually quite funny, you know, us with our nice fast fiber links and all that stuff, it checks to see if your line is okay. Mm-hmm. Mine failed because of the fact that I had 150 millisecond ping time, but then what it does, it just takes your resolution down to 720p from 1080p, like that's really a deal breaker of note, you know. But the games were really playable, and, you know, I try to play some fast action games, you know, simple like Sonic Racer and those type of things, which are quite fast action. Works really, really superbly. I was very, very impressed.
It's interesting to hear that, because one hopes that NVIDIA is going to put down some infrastructure here in Teraco or something similar in due course to deal with that issue. But the Shield isn't officially supported in South Africa, is it?
No, it's not. You can buy them locally from people that obviously import them, like GWiz and those guys. You know, they go for about ₹4,600 or so. Mm-hmm. So you can get them, but obviously it comes at a price. I ordered directly from Amazon in the US, because my home theater receiver is like 18 years old, so it doesn't have HDMI. The Shield doesn't have an optical out, so I had to order a separate breakout box just to get the audio to the receiver, and then the Shield plugs directly into the TV. So, you know.
Always so, more toys to buy.
Yeah, of course. I couldn't agree more there, Reinhardt.
You didn't think of upgrading the amp at the same time.
I would love to upgrade the amp, and I really want to do it as soon as possible. But luckily, the amount of devices that I'm connecting to it nowadays is reduced, because now you've just got your DSTV and the Shield, and that's it.
Yes.
The Xbox has moved to the TV in the pub. That's where my son likes to play Fortnite, so that he can see. so less devices, but yeah, I need to upgrade the amp. It really is in dire need.
Yeah. Is your son Sorry, Reinhardt.
Sorry, Duncan. Interesting that you still got DSTV. You haven't decided about cord cutting. Yes.
Actually, Reinhardt, that is actually one of the big reasons why we bought the Shield, is because we were we are considering it. I mean, my wife was telling me that, you know, why do we still have it? And I said, well, look, we have it because of the sport. I also did over the last week is I've been using the DStv Now app a hell of a lot more than what I thought I would use it. And I mean, the quality is what it's fine. It's actually bearable. It's not, you know, because I can see they have really put some effort into making sure that it is sort of relatively close to HD and so forth. It's not nearly as good as satellite. I mean, the satellite stream is still the best that you can get.
No, you still have to give satellite credit for that. I mean, full 4K sport on a nice TV. I mean, it's a pretty special experience. You can't replicate that with streaming at the moment.
No, and I must say, from what a lot of people have said, I mean, streaming in 4K, especially from Netflix, is actually really good. It's especially with HDR and all that.
Yeah.
But you know, at the end of the day, the DStv Now app is you know, we're giving it a try, and I think it's going to work out for us. So that's something that we're seriously considering.
Using someone else's credentials.
I wasn't going to say that.
is there a WhatsApp group or something? I should join it.
luckily, my mom is she's an avid DStv subscriber. So
I think a lot of people are doing that. I think a lot of people are doing that actually.
And the thing is, there's nothing really that MultiChoice can do. They can't police it because how do they know where that stream comes from or whatever the case is?
But, yes,
you know. But
do they lock it down at all to like two users or two devices?
Five devices, I believe. Five devices. So it's something that you five, know, but also. Okay. Yeah, it's five devices. So if you've got multiple TVs in your house, get five boxes and you're good to go. Plus, obviously, you've got your phone, which is always handy when you're out on the move to be able to catch that rugby game or so forth.
That is interesting. Rechard, if you could boost your volume slightly, you have gone a little bit quiet on your side.
Is this a little bit better now?
Yeah, that sounds a bit better. But I wanted to ask, so the DStv Now app, Glenn, works on the NVIDIA Shield. You can just get it straight from the Play Store, can you?
Yes, you can. The thing is, what MultiChoice did quite recently is they've locked down the DStv Now app so that you can only download it on certified Google devices or Android TV devices. So essentially, that basically brings that
Understood.
Number down to the Telkom Lit Box, the Mi Box, and Xiaomi's the Shield, and obviously select Sony TVs. And I must say, the interface is really it's a really nice interface. I mean, I've been using it on the phone and so forth, but I just like the way they've categorized the different channels so you can get to a channel quite easily and even the catch-up content and so forth works really well.
Yeah.
So I've got to give them some credit. You know, they've been getting a lot of flack, you know, because of the price, because of, you know, all these different things that have been plaguing them. They're so late to the market with a streaming-only product and so forth. But they did a good job on this one. I've got to give them some credit in that.
Okay. And tell us a bit more about the NVIDIA Shield. What is the remote control like? Is it easy to use? What does it look like?
The remote is okay. Look, you know, when you look at remote design, you usually have the up, down, left, right arrow, and the center of those arrows is the OK button. And your back button is usually either a top left or bottom left, or some people put it bottom right. There's no real consistency. So I'm used to the back button being top left because that's what my Harmony remote has. So I keep on grabbing the remote, you know, and suddenly I'm pushing a button, and it's the button that you use to bark commands at it, you know, like, you know, to fire up the Google Assistant, and then I like got to cancel, and then I got to move my finger up to go and find the actual button to control it. So it takes a bit getting used to. The only thing that I didn't realize about the Shield is that it doesn't have an IR receiver, an infrared receiver, so I can't control it with my Harmony One, which I was a bit disappointed with. But you know, back to having two remotes, juggling two remotes. But you know, again, like I want to do with all the other things I'd like to do is get the Harmony Elite and Hub, and that's the one that you can control the Shield and obviously all your devices with, and you know, not with infrared, but with an IP control. So it controls the Shield with IP control, which is quite nice. And then, of course, it's got Amazon Echo integration and Google Home, and you can tell it to turn the TV on and all those type of fun stuff. So that's something that I would like to do,
Yeah, interesting. And is there an app for Android that you can, or for your iPhone for that matter, that you can control the box with?
No, there's no app. No, you just control it straight with the remote, But, I mean, for me, that's fine. You know, it's amazing when you talk about remote controls and how people tend to neglect the fact that the physical buttons on the remote are probably such an important feature of a remote. You know, many people have gone the tablet route, where you've got a remote app on your tablet, and you use that to control your system. I mean, there's a couple out there that you can do it with, but there's just nothing like that tactile feedback. You know, because you're not looking at the remote, you need to find the button to turn the volume up or down, and it's just a lot easier with a tactile remote. Yeah.
Okay. And tell us, what apps are you running on the Shield?
Currently, I've just got the standard streaming apps, so YouTube, Netflix, DStv Now, and then of course every device that I ever get. One of the first apps I put on is Spotify.
Okay.
Because that obviously, because the Shield is connected to the main system, so I've got to have some, you know, when you need to play music, I fire up the Spotify, and I must say Spotify Connect is just an amazing technology. It's just a game changer, if I have to say that.
Spotify Connect, what is that again?
Spotify Connect is basically when you are running Spotify on your phone and you tap the little, I think it's a little button, little dots at the bottom, or other devices, and you can see all the different devices that you can play Spotify on.
Yes.
So, and then, I mean, all the Echoes and of course, all the TVs will appear in that list. So I can say, okay, I tap on Echo in the bedroom and it will play it, or Echo in the kitchen, or I've got an everywhere, in other words, all the Echoes. Like, so I say, just play Spotify everywhere, and all the Echoes start playing music.
Nice,
or I can say, now I'm going to play in the living room, and I tap on the living room, and then that works fine. Yeah, it's great.
Fantastic.
It is a game changer in terms of online streaming services. It really is. Nobody else is doing it.
It puts them way above everybody else.
Yeah, it does, definitely.
Fantastic. And do you use Plex at all, as a matter of interest? Have you looked at Plex?
Oh, yes. Yes, I do, actually. Plex, is, again, it's just amazing. I mean, the experience on the Shield is it just works perfectly. I mean, I run the Plex server on my computer upstairs, so that's got any downloaded content. That's how I stream the downloaded content. But the Shield also has a Plex server on it as well, which is again one of the only devices that has it. So if you have a hard drive full of content on, you just plug it into the USB port, point the Plex server to it, boom, you're done. So you know, that's for those that don't have a NAS or a dedicated machine, or even just a standard PC running a Plex server. You know, so it really works superbly well. I'm very impressed. And I mean with the old Android box, I couldn't get Dolby Digital through at all. It just wouldn't work. And I fired up a movie, boom, I got Dolby Digital through. It just worked out of the box, yeah.
So you're a bit like me, Glenn. You run a range of platforms. I mean, I've got iOS devices here, Android devices, Windows PCs, I think I've got some Linux running around here somewhere. It's a pretty heterogeneous environment. A lot of people swear by going for one particular platform. So particularly Apple users, I find, will say, well, if you've got an iPhone, you've got to have the Apple TV and the Apple Watch and the MacBook and the iPad, et cetera, et cetera. Running multiple platforms in your home environment, where you're trying to interconnect all of these things, does it make life very difficult, or do you find it's relatively trivial to get them all to talk nicely to each other?
I was a big Apple evangelist, a few years ago, you know, especially with Apple that brought out AirPlay. I mean, AirPlay was, at those years back, was really a game changer, because you had the Airport Express devices, you got your Apple TV, so you run iTunes on your computer and you say to it, okay, these are all the devices, now play music, and you've got whole house audio done.
Yeah.
And it really was a simple process to set up, and you've got the remote control app on your phone to control the music and so forth. But, you know, things have changed. Apple's no longer going to do the Airport Expresses, so that's one device down. They're very much relying on their HomePod now, and for me, that the HomePod is I'm not interested, to be blatantly honest.
Why not?
Besides the price, I mean, it's quite an expensive device, but it really again, it doesn't support Spotify natively.
Right.
You know, it's Apple Music or nothing. So that for me was a deal breaker. If I can't do Spotify on the device, that's it. I'm not interested.
The walls in the walled garden are getting too high for you.
They were getting too high. And the thing is, I wanted, when Spotify came out, was it earlier this year? I needed that whole house audio solution. I wasn't, and you know, to try and set up something on the computer, to try and push audio to all the devices, to all the Echoes and so forth, was it was just not possible. So luckily with somehow the Amazon Echoes found me, for that matter, because a friend of mine in the US, they run a podcast called the Home Theater and HDTV podcast. They've been listening. They've been up since 2005 and they're still going today, and we're very much in touch. So he decided he was going to get rid of his Echoes, and I sent him a mail, said, hey, just pop them in the mail and send them to me, you know. So, and then my whole house audio situation was sorted. You know, I've got one connected to the amp in the pub, which feeds the speakers where my braai area is. I've got one in the kitchen. I've got my the echo spot in the bedroom, and then of course I've got an echo upstairs.
Yeah.
And I got audio where everywhere in the house, which is really great. So, getting away from the Apple, doing the Apple way of doing things, has been just a game changer because of the fact that that convenience of, I mean, Spotify in itself, because that for me was a big game changer. Yeah.
And is Alexa working for you here and in South Africa?
Works brilliantly. You know, what happened was when I got my first the first Echo for Christmas, and I hooked it up and set it up, and I couldn't choose South Africa, but I could choose Namibia for some reason.
How bizarre.
Yeah, very bizarre, you know. And so in any case, in the new year, I went online to go and search to see how we can make this thing work in South Africa, and there was some hack that you could do. But and then for some reason, I actually went back into the Alexa app. Well, I shouldn't say that. Probably find off everybody's echoes now. I went into the app, and then, boom, I can now choose South Africa. That is great. And I put in my location details, so at least when I say ask for the weather, it'll give me the weather of my current location. So I thought, wow, that's it. They've got this situation sorted. So clearly Amazon in the background has been making sure that the Echoes will work in different countries, although they're not officially available here. They don't get sold here officially, but you know, you can buy them online again from companies. They're about $1,200, I think, for the Echo Dot. They work brilliantly. I'm very impressed.
So what did you say? I mustn't say hey Alexa.
Yeah,
I'm sure you've got headphones on there, so that's not good.
Yeah, luckily, but also a lot of people that are listening. It's quite amazing when you listen to other podcasts. They always try and sort of veer away from using the wake word because suddenly everybody's echoes start
popping up,
going off. Yeah,
I was listening to another podcast the other day. I think it was Leo Laporte's or one of the Twit podcasts, and he said, "Hey Google," and of course, my phone woke up. It's supposed to be trained for your voice, but apparently not very well.
The Google Home, the Google Home is a device we should not forget about, because it's also making such a lot of impact, you know, into this whole intelligent assistance and so forth. Really also a great device.
Mm. Great stuff. So I wanted to talk, Glenn, to you about your home automation project as well, which I don't know much about. You've sent me a lot of detail on what you're doing with home entertainment, but you're also, I believe, working on some home automation stuff and doing some investigating there. Tell us more about that.
Oh, I tell you that I'm still very much in my early stages of my home automation journey, but I think I've overcome, what's the big thing about home automation is what platform do you choose to control all your devices?
Yeah.
And, for instance, I've been looking at home automation for many, many years now. And, I mean, the three companies that dominate home automation is Control4, Crestron, and Savant. But those systems are installed by a certified professional. They come in, they get your requirements, they set up the whole thing, they program it for you based on your requirements, and you pay a bucket load of money for it.
Mm-hmm.
But they are great systems. They really, I mean, a friend of mine just installed a Control 4 into his house now, and for his lighting and so forth. And it's, so I got a bit of time to play with it. And it's a really, really nice system. You know, they've got their own hardware. They can talk to other hardware. So you can see there's a lot of R&D and effort that goes into such systems. And again, those are very much towards the type of person that is not technical. That is not, doesn't have the time to tinker and play and try things, and so they just want someone to come and set it up for them and walk away and maybe get them to change little things here and there. And so the consumerization of home automation has really, really become a lot more prevalent over the last couple of years, especially with the introduction of the Amazon Echo and the Google Home devices, because that is where a lot of people that are getting into home automation are buying devices like smart light bulbs and obviously the Harmony Elites and all those type of things. And the Echo and the Google Home can talk to these devices, so you can bark out commands to turn off lights. You can set up routines and schedules so that it will turn on lights or do something at when you give it the command, or whether you're at a specific time. So really, that consumerization has really, really come into the fray. Now, of course, if you want to go a lot more than that, you know, where you want to now get really stuck in to make the automations truly automated, because at the end of the day, you know, home automation is not about barking commands at a digital assistant. It's about things happening in your home automatically without your input, or with very little of your input. And I think that is one sort of grounding philosophy that people need to keep in mind. Yes, we can start off by doing the Echoes and the Google Homes and barking commands at them and to turn on lights and so forth, but I always see them as a secondary, it's a secondary action. You know, if that light is not on, by the time I walk into the room, I must be able to tell someone to turn it on, or even turn on a physical light switch to turn it on. So, you know, so, and that's where the platform that I chose is an open source home automation platform called Home Assistant. And it is, there's this really smart guy. His name is Paulus Schutzen, and he decided he also had all these devices and they couldn't talk to one another and he couldn't control them. And he developed this platform, and I think over the last 3 or 4 years, it's really matured. It supports over 1,000 different devices and components. It's easy to set up. And of course, you still need a bit of technical know-how to get it up and running, because you still have to dig into configuration files and so forth. But I think once you've got it sorted, it just works. And it's running on a Raspberry Pi at the moment. And currently it's just controlling my outside front lights. So, currently I've grabbed two Xiaomi. Xiaomi is just an amazing company. They make everything. And they make the Yi Light. And the Yi Light is a color changing light bulb. So it's a E27, you know, like the threaded socket. Pop those in the front, and every day when the sun goes down, because the Home Assistant, you can say to it, when the sun goes down, turn on the lights. When the sun comes up, turn off the lights. So you don't have to worry about changing times as we approach summer or as we approach winter.
It knows when the sunset is.
It knows when the sun sets and when it comes up. So those are the two lights.
Where do you get those bulbs? Where do you get those? Are they available locally?
You can order them from GearBest, but I know that I got mine from a guy. I went on Gumtree and I found a guy in Pretoria somewhere who also imports them. So I just they're actually so affordable. I mean, if you look at Philips Hue, Philips Hue is it's expensive. You know, plus you're buying into an ecosystem, you know, with their hub and all that stuff. Mm. So I mean, the Xiaomi Yi lights are about 330 rand each. You know, it's really and they last. And of course, you know, I'm not going to go and tell the lights to go and turn green and red when they come on every night. So they just go warm white. But actually, what I did last night.
Come on,
night
you want a disco in your garden?
Actually, I can. I can set them to strobe, and actually, they'll strobe in the front house. It's quite fun to watch. And so last night, after England, beat, I think, where did they play? Croatia? Or I can't remember. I turned the one light red and the other one light white. Uh-huh. And I posted on Facebook, this is for you, England. Or when the Springboks win a rugby game, I turn them green, you know, just for the fun of it. It's always
legitimate use of the technology.
And my wife just like thinks her head like, oh no, what are you doing? That's currently the start, but in terms of lighting, smart lighting within the house, and now there I've chosen to go with a company. They're Cape Town based, called Quick Switch. Mm-hmm. They're actually around the corner from where I work, so it's quite nice. They're so close, so if I need stuff, I can just go there and grab. And they make a series of relays and dimmer relays and sensors and so forth that obviously you – and what I like about their product is that when you turn the light on via a light switch, and what they do is they've got a flat – it looks like a flat light switch. You can get a 2 and a 4 gang light switch, and it's a flat. So basically, you can put it anywhere in your house. You know, if you want to take the existing light switches out, pop it in, it'll be fine. It's a 2x4 size, and it transmits. So when you push the button, it transmits over RF radio frequency to the receiver that will then turn the light on or off or dim it or whatever the case is. You know, because again, there are a lot of devices that have come out. There's another company called Sonoff, which is very, very popular as well. But the problem with some of these devices is that you still need that physical light switch. And that's what I still believe. You have to have that physical light switch, even if it is a smart light switch. You know, because you're going to have people coming to your house. They're not necessarily going to know which command to ask the Echo to turn the lights on, or they don't have your phone. So they need to push a button. So push button sends a... sends a command to the relay. It will then turn off the light or turn it on and so forth. Then obviously bring this all into Home Assistant. Now suddenly you can really go to town with this. At the end of the day, it's your creativity that really is your stepping point. So it's amazing, you know, when the sun goes down and if a certain person is in or a certain device is on, turn that light on, for instance. So it's really, it's amazing what one can do.
I presume you could, these are a lot of what they call IFTTT or if that then that rules, and there are lots of those apps available. I presume
there
you
are,
could
yes.
use an IFTTT app to create all sorts of interesting rules depending on what you want to do.
You can. The thing is, obviously Home Assistant is, the idea with Home Assistant specifically is that it should not rely on the cloud to execute commands.
Okay.
So, and that's just the whole philosophy. You could obviously access it from outside your network or in that way, but the idea is it should not rely on a cloud-based service to control it. So, and that was what I liked about Quick Switch specifically, is that if there is no internet, the lights will still work. So that I thought was quite cool. But, you know, and there's actually another platform that a guy I know who lives in our area has built, which actually is cloud-based. It's called HomeBot, and he's built integrated with services like IFTTT and so forth to also enact home automation. And as I said, it works as well very, very well. And he's also integrated using the Quick Switch system as well.
Great.
Yeah. Now I must say this home automation thing. They say it's like crack when you start and you can't stop. You know, because I mean, one of the things that I want to also do is that my son has this tendency that when he's finished playing Xbox in the pub, he doesn't turn the light off. So I wrote an automation that when he turns the TV off, 30 seconds later the lights will turn off. And what's nice is that the TV downstairs is it's a LG, it's running WebOS, and Home Assistant has native integration to WebOS. So it knows when the TV gets turned on and off.
Yeah.
So he turns it off, I wait 30 seconds, clip, the lights go off.
Very cool.
There's a lot of fun things that one can do.
It sounds like the ultimate aim here is to never get out of your comfy chair.
Yeah, that's what many people say. You lazy guys.
Now you just need to build a robot that can fetch the beer from the fridge.
Oh yeah,
I was just about to say exactly the same thing. So what technology can you employ
more
for that?
Well, nowadays these guys have integrated into the Roomba vacuum cleaners and so forth. So I guess they're getting there. Huh?
Sorry, carry on.
I think the real solution to that beer fetching robot problem is not to get the robot to do it, but to get it as a system of like a delivery system to bring it to you from wherever it is. You know what I'm saying? Like in a fridge system in the roof, and it just drops it down for you. Less tech sometimes works better, I think.
I'm surprised you haven't built such a system yet, Richard.
I do. I just don't like to share it publicly. It might make me look like a bit of a geek.
So what's the ultimate aim, Glenn? Where do you want to go with this? Do you want a fully automated house eventually?
Yeah, look, at the end of the day, I want to make sure that the mundane tasks are taken care of. You know, I think probably one of the biggest tasks that I now have sorted is the front lights, because I get home at night and the wife is already home and the lights aren't on yet. You know, I just like to have that. But at the end of the day, it's about triggering actions based on what you do. So if we do come home late at night and it's dark and you open the garage door, it must turn on the light in the lounge so that we, you know, have light. The idea is just to automate those little things. And I'm sure that as time will go by, I'll figure out a lot more. So it's going to be quite fun to figure out what else I'm going to be doing. But I mean, there's guys out there that have really went to the next level with home automation. I mean, the houses tweet out, you know, stats, and you know, they use the Echo specifically to give it a command, and the home assistant will say, oh, okay, it's a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. This is the kids will, it gives the kids their chores for the day. I mean, you know, and you can eventually mount tablets on walls with the house with statistics like the temperature, you know. And, I mean, I want to eventually do a monitoring of water consumption and power consumption as well. That would be quite fun, because yeah, then you can start triggering actions based on, you know, when a particular appliance is turned on or turned off and stuff like that. So really, one can go to town with this. It's just your imagination is your limit.
I don't know why, but I've got this image of my head of the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, where Dave got stuck outside the pod bay doors and Hal wouldn't let him back in. I've just got this image of arriving home to this fully automated house and the system refusing to open the door for me.
Sorry, Duncan, you're not allowed to go home tonight.
Yeah, you may not enter. Duncan.
Yeah, and the funny thing is that the Echoes are programmed not to actually allow you to unlock your door using a command. It'll tell you no, they don't allow that. Because, okay, I mean, the last thing you need is some guy to come past your house and say, Wakeward, open the front door, and then suddenly, boom, they let you in. Yeah. So they actually don't allow that, which I think is quite good.
Yeah. Well, let's be honest, people do use 1234 as their password, and that will happen.
Yes, yeah. I agree.
My password is password, yeah. Great. Well, let's move on. In fact, let's take a quick ad break, and then we're going to get on to this week's news. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you a search engine? Because you found me.
I feel we have a strong connection.
Well, you're pretty fly for a Wi-Fi. Should we drop it like a hotspot and head back to yours so we can show Max and snuggle? Let's get Giga with it.
But I don't have fiber. Don't get caught in 50 shades of delay. Broadband your horizons and switch to Vox's super fast, super reliable fiber network. Experience the momentum. Connect your world. Visit us at vox.co.za/fiber.
Bitco is revolutionizing the way businesses connect. We're taking on your connectivity challenges and shooting our high-speed fiber internet across the country. Not just for some, but for everyone. Fiber is not a luxury, but a necessity. For business, for life, for you. And being connected is everything. So network with a Tier 1 internet provider and take your business to the next level of connectivity. Bitco.co.za. Connectivity is everything.
Welcome back to the show. How's it, Glenn? How's it, Rechot?
How's it?
We've had a fascinating discussion about the world of home automation and home entertainment, but it's time to get on to this week's news. And luckily, it's a bit of a truncated section this week. I'm saying lucky because there wasn't a huge amount going on this week on the news front. But interesting announcement from Teraco, the big data center operator. They have built two big data centers now on the East Rand of Johannesburg. They've got facilities, I think, in Durban, and they definitely have one in Cape Town as well. But they've announced they're going to pump another 1 billion rand into expanding their Isando data center facility out near the airport and here in Johannesburg. They've already invested something like 3 or 4 billion rand in data center infrastructure in South Africa. They're the largest, they call themselves vendor neutral data center operator in Africa. And it just shows you how cloud computing has really taken off. And this is an incredible South African success story, this company. I don't know if you guys have had a chance to go and visit their facilities. I was last there perhaps a year ago when they were busy with a expansion of their Isando data center, but it's incredibly impressive facility. The scale of it, the amount of electricity going into this facility, the backup generators, but they really are a property company at the end of the day. I mean, they're leasing space, racks, to third parties. They're incredible amount of fiber going into those buildings. You look at the manhole covers, or you open a manhole cover there and you have a look inside, and it's just incredible to see the amount of telecommunications infrastructure going in there. It must be the most connected place on the continent.
You realize how much in a digital world we live when you see these data centers, when you see them on the inside, and there's so many of them, you know, throughout the city and the suburbs too. There's a few popping, you know, there's a few popping up every few blocks and so on. You really realize it. Wow, we are living in that digital era we saw in the movies a few years ago.
Yeah, and I must say, Teraco, you know, Teraco is basically the data centers where a lot of the internet service providers peer with one another, and a lot of the fiber infrastructure providers actually, that is so basically, as I'm speaking to you now, all the bits and bytes are traveling to the Teraco center in the Great Westford building in Newlands, and then obviously peer to the to my ISP. It's just amazing. It really is. These guys have really come a long way since those, even 2008, I think, when they started. It's really amazing.
Incredible success story. And just continuing to invest. And we haven't even seen, Microsoft is building a data center here in South Africa, strongly rumored to be Liquid Telecom, although there's no official confirmation of that. And of course, Amazon is strongly rumored to be planning to come as well at some point. So we're probably just still at the fairly early stages of this investment into massive data center infrastructure. I think we don't realize just how much electricity the cloud consumes when you look at some of these numbers. I think the figure they're talking about when they finish this next build at Teraco is going to be 80 megawatts.
It's
substantial.
Is Eskom ready for this? Do they realize what stuff is coming and they need to be prepared for capacity delivery?
Well, chatting to the guys from Teraco, they say they've got a very good working relationship with the Ekurhuleni municipality, which is the east of Johannesburg, and apparently they've fully committed to this business and they provide reliable power. We do have electricity challenges in South Africa, and those I'm sure those generators are there for a reason.
I can imagine those generators must be monsters.
Oh, they are absolutely
huge. To
be able
to deliver 80 megawatts of power, I mean, you can only imagine. I mean, you know, I see the size of the generator that powers our office block at work, and it's now just multiply that by 100-fold. It must be just amazing to see.
No, I think one of those generators is almost the size of my house. To give you an idea of the size.
You don't really want those things to run, though. That's the other problem, I guess.
They're expensive to run.
Expensive to run, and also I'm sure they're not too friendly on the environment. I mean, there's a lot of fuel being burnt there.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And they have to keep this diesel on site as well, of course, because if the power goes out, they've got to start up immediately. They've got battery backup, which doesn't last all that long. And then once the, you know, I think the batteries are just there while the generators get fired up, and then they've got to run on diesel. They've got vast reservoirs of diesel that they have to store on site. And keeping that diesel clean is also a challenge, because diesel does deteriorate in quality over time. So you've got to swap it out or clean it. It's quite a logistical challenge. Teraco, R1 billion further investment. Quite a hell of a story, actually. And the other story I wanted to touch on this week is Telkom. They've announced new low-cost voice bundles for their freemi plans, their data-led freemi plans. And these prices are really, really aggressive. The freemi packages are already amongst the most competitive in the market, certainly from a data perspective. And if you go up to some of the high-end freemi packages, you're also getting a lot of voice thrown in as well. On those lower end packages where you're getting maybe a gigabyte or 2 gigabytes of data and spending, I don't know, 100, 150 rand a month, you can now add voice bundles to those freemi plans, and the prices work out to as low as 30 cents a minute on per second billing for a voice call under these new plans. Now, they are promotional, so they may be taken away at some point. They haven't been officially filed with ICASA, so they're not permanent tariffs, but Telkom hasn't said when the promotion is going to end, and I suspect if it's successful, they'll probably keep it. But the VAT inclusive prices for the bundles are 100 minutes, 40 rand, 200 minutes, 80 rand, 300 minutes, 100 rand, and 500 minutes, 150 rand, and this is to any network. It's not just on network calls. That's pretty aggressive pricing, right, guys?
I must say it is impressive. I just did a little calculation now, and I took the Freemi 2, which is the 2 gig one, and bolted on, say, I think 200 minutes or something like that.
Yeah.
And basically, it's coming to the same price that I'm currently paying for my contract with my network provider. But at the end of the day, I'm getting a lot more value out of Telkom. It's just amazing to see how far they've come over the past few years, especially with these freemi plans.
So are you a freemi customer?
No, I'm not. I'm still with the other big red network.
The guys in Midrand. begins with a V.
Yes. And you know, and I've been really considering changing to Telkom. I mean, especially data. I mean, I need that data. I'm having to buy bundles, and it's just
Is coverage still an issue with Telkom? Coverage?
No, because it has MTN roaming. So if you can, it's not 4G roaming. I suspect that's going to come sometime, perhaps in the next year, especially after Cell C announced a 4G roaming agreement with MTN. But if you drive outside the cities, then or even into areas in South Africa where in the urban areas where Telkom might not have coverage, you'll switch across to MTN.
Yeah, and I must say, MTN's rural coverage is exceptionally good.
It is.
I've been very, where I wouldn't have coverage with Vodacom, MTN, boom, I've got coverage. It's really impressive because, especially when we go down to the south coast of KwaZulu-Natal for Christmas, and, because what we decided to do was put up an antenna for internet access, and MTN just came up tops with that. The others, I mean, Vodacom was virtually non-existent, one or two or three megabits, but it's MTN's rural coverage is very good.
Yeah, and it's not only 3G and 2G. There's quite a bit of 4G outside the cities now as well.
Mm. I've been very happy with this service, I must be honest. Yeah. I mean, I look at these other packages and I am tempted for a lot of reasons, but there hasn't been from a deliverance in terms of service and just quality. It's been very good.
Yeah.
And obviously, don't forget that Afrio's data collaboration. That data is quite cheap if you do it that way.
Yeah. Well, that's not as competitive as it used to be with some of the prices that are coming into the market now.
No, for sure. But you can manage everything very nicely with that app, which very few other people still don't have.
For sure. So Telkom Freeme, definite thumbs up there for those new packages. Let's look at our, let's move on to our regular features rather. And Glenn, I meant to speak to you before the show. I don't know if you have a pick this week, if you have an app or a particular product that you can't do without. Put your thinking cap on while we do our winner and loser of the week section.
Don't worry, I've come prepared.
We've come prepared. Oh, good.
He knows the show.
Our winner this week is Mark Zuckerberg, who has overtaken Warren Buffett to be the world's third richest person, ahead of or just behind Bill Gates, and number one is of course Jeff Bezos. But incredible rise to fortunes for a guy who was sitting in a college dorm room not too long ago. Third richest man in the world, founder of Facebook, of course. And our loser this week is Kim.com, one of the answers in our quiz this week. The New Zealand court has said that he can be extradited to the US over copyright infringement related to his website, megaupload.com. He has indicated that he's going to appeal that to a higher court. Troubling time, I think, for Kim.com.
Why has he not bought an island with all his money and just kind of cut himself off from the world? That's probably going to be the best solution, right?
Possibly, yeah. Yeah. he made a fortune from that site. And, so that's our winner and loser of the week. Richard, what's your pick this week?
So I've been playing with a cool little app called Holo. I'm sure you've seen some videos around floating around the internet and social media with people inserting like a VR image or a VR character into their photos and video. So Holo is one of the apps that allow you to do that. And it's got quite a nice library of funny and serious and all random kind of AR characters. And as you would expect from any decent AR app, the scale and the size of the character as you move around is pretty good. But it's fun. It's fun to see what people can do with some clever technology and AR being one of them, using your camera. Everybody's got a camera on their phone, and you can create some cool social media shareable videos. It's available for Android and the Mac. It's available
iPhone.
For Android and iPhone, yeah.
And it's HOLOW, is it?
No, HOLO.
Oh, Holo. Okay.
Holo.
As in HoloLens.
HoloLens.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. We'll include a link to that in the show notes. Glenn, what have you got?
I'm going to pick the Amazon Echo Spot. And those who don't know what it is, it basically looks like a little ball, but it's got a little circular display on it. And the intention with this device that Amazon brought out in December last year was to replace the good old alarm clock that one typically has on your nightstand. I mean, I've had an alarm clock that, and the alarm clock itself really hasn't had any love in terms of technology since its inception. I mean, you know, you can tell it to go off at a certain time and it'll either buzz or the radio, and that's pretty much it, you know. So, you know, in this day and age where we need to be able to set these things to wake us up at certain days of the week or certain times of the week, say on a Tuesday, and on a Monday and a Thursday we need to wake up at 5:30 instead of 6:15, for instance, you know, you just can't do that with traditional clocks, and the Spot just hands down gets that right. And it really, I don't touch it, it just works, you know. So I've set it up so that it wakes us up depending on which day of the week we need to be woken up earlier. The radio comes on, it streams from TuneIn, and it's great. And of course, you can tell it to do stuff too, which is really nice.
Yeah. Not officially available in South Africa, unfortunately.
No, not officially available, but it works really well.
There are ways and means.
Yes.
I'm going to pick a book this week for the first time in ages. I'm only a third of the way through it, so just a little caveat there. But I am absolutely loving it. It's called Homo Deus. It came out a few years ago. The full title is Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow, and it's written by a historian, I think based in Israel now, by the name of Yuval Noah Harari. He is probably more famous for writing the book Sapiens, which I haven't read, but I suspect I'll be reading it after I finish this book because it is so good. He just basically looks at the humanity's near future and where we're likely to be going and what technology is going to do to society and to us and to our bodies. And it's really brilliantly researched and written, looking at both the history of humankind and speculating on where we might be going. He talks about the fact that, I mean, talks about things like the end of war, the end of famine, and the fact that all of this has happened just in the last 100 years or less in the case of war, for example. But certainly you've got more chance now, as he points out, of dying of obesity than dying in a war or in a criminal attack. And this was never the case in the past. People are dying of cancer now. In the past, they died of the Black Plague or the Spanish flu or whatever it happened to be. But really, really well-researched book. I'm not doing it justice, I know, here in this description. But it's one of the best books I've read in a while. Again, I've only read a third of it, but I'm expecting the rest of it to be just as entertaining and just as insightful. So highly, highly recommended book, Homo Deus, A Brief History of Tomorrow by Yuval Noah Harari. Great read. And I think that's our show this week, apart from our quiz results. Let me find the right piece of paper here in front of me. There we go. I've got so much paper in front of me today. You'd think I've got three or four screens in front of me that I wouldn't need paper, but
I was just going to comment on that, but I thought, let me not. Digital Duncan to the rescue.
Yeah, I don't know what, I always want these show notes on paper because I'm scribbling notes on them all the time while you guys talk and writing down questions. And I suppose if I'm typing on the keyboard, you're going to hear the clacking on the podcast, which won't be so great. So instead, you'll get the shuffle of the paper. Let me do the first question. Which U.S. wireless smart speaker company this week announced plans for an initial public offering? And that is Sonos.
The second question, a New Zealand court this week said that founder of MegaUpload.com could be extradited to the U.S. Who is he? And the answer there is Kim.com.
And which African country has started taxing internet users to access Facebook, Twitter, and other social media platforms? How utterly stupid. The answer there is Uganda.
The fourth question, Vodacom this weekend showed off the capabilities of 5G technology at which sporting event? And that is the Durban July.
And the last question in this week's quiz, telecommunications infrastructure player FiberCo has announced plans to build fiber into towns along its national fiber routes. Which town is it targeting first? And that is Kroonstad in the Northern Free State. I was actually there recently, briefly. Great. Nice. Well, That's our show this week. Glenn, thank you so much for joining us. You're welcome back on the show anytime. So just shout if you'd, if you've got something, maybe an update on your home automation projects, or you just feel like hanging out with us guys on a Sunday afternoon. You are most welcome to join us anytime.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for the invite. It was really great to be on the show.
And that's at Glenn Verin on Twitter, right?
On Twitter, yeah. Although I haven't tweeted like in years, but hey, I'm still on the Twitter sphere.
Okay. You're a lurker, are you? I find myself lurking more and more on Twitter myself, actually. It's a great source of information that I'm not tweeting as much as I used to.
Yeah, I'm more active on Facebook than on Twitter, though. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay. Not Instagram TV then either, eh?
Definitely not.
And Snapchat and all the rest of them. Not in the right demographic for that, are you?
Definitely not. I'm not going to say that I'm getting too old.
your home automation stuff could make for some good Instagram TV content.
Probably could, huh? Yeah, there's a lot of guys.
All your hacks and tricks could be very cool. Yeah. You can even do that on Facebook these days too.
Yeah, live stream and everything is really cool.
Yeah, you can even put bunny ears on your head while you're doing it.
Yeah, exactly.
No, that's more Snapchat. Right, before this descends into any more lack of seriousness, let's end the show right here. As always, if you've got any feedback, we'd love to hear from you. Send us a voice note. Tell us what you're doing in the home automation space. What does your home entertainment system look like? What have you done? What do you think of Glenn? What is Glenn is doing? What do you think of the NVIDIA Shield? Tell us all about it on 071-999-1111. If you make it a voice note, we can include it in the next show. And if you prefer the old school way of getting in touch, info@techcentral.co.za is our email address. Until next Sunday, from Rechart, Glenn, and myself, Duncan, cheers.
Ciao, ciao.
Cheers, there.